Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 58. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero. John is out this week. He's in Austin attending Spice World. But don't worry, if you're missing John, I've got some great clips for you. A couple of weeks ago, John and I decided to go to this little thing called VMworld 2017, and we captured a lot of really good conversations with folks. And so I want to use this content and share it with you, but we've been trying to figure out a way to present all of this content that makes sense. And so we're going to start with a theme called partner perspectives. We did get a lot of really good conversations from partners, and we wanted to share those with you. So this week, I've got two conversations from partners that are dealing with performance in general, whether it's storage, whether it's networking, whether it's doing some benchmarking. The first one is from a gentleman from Intel by the name of James Myers. James is a really cool guy, and so we had a great conversation with him around what they're doing with vSAN, but also some of the really cool hardware that's coming out of Intel. So take a listen.
We're out here talking about how SSD technology is evolving, how it's moving forward, and obviously that's a great pair with vSAN. So a couple of different things happening, new NAND technologies, maybe you've heard about Optane. That's pretty cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we're just here to tell people about what's happening there and the value.
So you think this SSD thing is going to stick around for a while? It's not a fad?
We're going back to magnetic.
Tape's still here. You can still get tape libraries. It's not, the hard drives aren't dead yet, although I wish they were.
Yeah.
I'm now thinking actually about if the flash gets cheap enough, we'll need a flash robot to, take it offline, and like just a tape robot, but for flash drives.
So yeah, I think the big social media company had a call for proposals in that space a couple of years back.
Oh, yeah.
I think they went to DVDs instead, though.
Yeah.
Not quite cheap enough yet.
Yeah.
It's going to get there, though. I mean, we've got some really cool technology coming out at Intel. We focus on two real vectors for the technology of the memories. One is the NAND. And the NAND, it's all about cost and density. Some people are complaining a little bit about getting a hold of NAND these days. And part of it's thanks to you guys for a great vSAN product, creating a tremendous amount of demand. But the other element is this transition in technology from a two-dimensional structure to three-dimensional structure. And really, that's pretty disruptive in the factory. You have to build a new set of equipment to be able to do that. And so that's kind of a rip and replace. And these are pretty big, expensive factories. So you can't exactly build an extra one to be able to manage this transition.
Yeah, that's the thing everyone has to realize is when y'all are going through this transition, you have to take capacity offline.
That's exactly right.
And if you've got multiple manufacturers or multiple fabs doing this simultaneously, it obviously leads to fun things on supply side for customers who are like, I want some drives. Why is the wait 16 weeks? But it's a very exciting time because when we come out of this, there's going to be some amazing capabilities. On that 3D NAND, I remember when 3D NAND first came out, I remember hearing, oh, they're only going to be able to go to 10 layers deep. There's some limits of physics or things, but it sounds like you guys have really punched through that stuff.
Well, we definitely have been focused on that. We've got our first generation, which is a 32-layer device. We've got our second generation now in some SSDs, the 64-layer device. We've got now 3 bits in every cell in the three-dimensional structure. So you can think of an apartment
TLC
building.
TLC or...
Yeah. And then people are talking about QLC or, eight bits in every cell. It's pretty tremendous. And that's coming down the pipe. We're absolutely invested in this technology. We've got new form factors coming out. I don't know if you guys have seen what's called the ruler form factor.
I saw that. It's like the whole length of a server deep, like you slot it in, right?
It's about half of the length of a server. It looks like a ruler. It's about a foot long, and it's about an inch high, so it can fit into one U rack. You can imagine they're about 7 or 8 millimeters wide. So you put 32 of them across the front of a server. And you can, when we get to the biggest capacity device, you'll do a petabyte in one U.
No, those the ruler form factor, the interconnects on the back, that's just going straight PCIe, right?
It is.
There's either to a crossbar or...
You can take it into a PCIe switch if you needed to fan it out. But, with Intel CPUs, we've been adding more and more PCIe lanes for every CPU.
That's right. The new generation, the amount of channels is just for PCIe is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think we went to 48 PCIe lanes on a CPU with this latest generation, and you'll see that continue to grow for sure. But, in the context of storage and storage networking, there's some nice PCIe switches out there, and they add you know, a couple hundred nanoseconds, maybe half a microsecond of latency. And when you're talking about an 80 microsecond transaction to an SSD, it's really a nit. So it works out pretty well.
So you're saying the two things, right? The first was like the availability, getting the availability of it. What was the second one?
Oh, the availability. So the other thing is the new technologies where we're invested. So first 3D NAND, bigger density. The second is the new memory technologies, the 3D XPoint, or what we put in our Optane SSDs. And there we're really trying to come up with what they'll call the holy grail of memory, where it is fast and persistent and cheap. You know, it's the three triangles, right? You can't get all three. But with the Optane SSDs that use this memory, we're trending that way very well. So there's a real big gap between DRAM, which is, 100 nanosecond sort of latencies, and byte addressable and managed in load store semantics versus storage, which is, the whole interface itself is about 7 or 8 microseconds just to go through the storage stack. And it's
lots of CPU interrupts, lots of CPU overhead.
Right.
It's computationally expensive to access, as well as it's, instead of it being, across the table, it's like it's being, all the way back in Texas or something.
Absolutely.
Vegas here. So.
Absolutely. But NAND SSD, so that's 6 or 7 microseconds just for the interface. But NAND is roughly 100 microseconds versus the hard drives. And so there's a big gap between 100 microseconds and 100 nanoseconds. We're coming out with the Optane memory, which really fills that gap. And the first version is in an SSD. So again, it gets right down to that 7 or 8 microsecond latency.
Man.
Right about what you can do with the limits of PCIe interface. And then we'll be putting it next year in a DIMM form factor. And that's a product that we've talked about coming out, and that's really going to be tremendous as well. Give you opportunities to have bigger memory, cheaper memory, or persistent memory, and it brings all of those attributes.
So a couple of things on this. Persistent memory is exciting because there's new classes of applications, that can be developed or in-memory databases and structures that can be, made resilient. They can be used for more than just transitory workflows and things like that. Also just other basic stuff like rebooting a host. In theory, if you've got persistent memory, you can load the entire state in there. So the reboot, assuming you're not doing a traditional BIOS, could be borderline instant.
Yeah.
Theoretical applications of this stuff are pretty interesting.
We've been working on the ecosystem for a couple of years now, and you're seeing things coming out in these NVDIMMs. They're awfully expensive and pretty small. However, they have value. People are adopting them in small areas to do exactly that, disaster recovery and things like that. But also the software guys are catching up with the persistent memory aware. Think about a database. If you normally have a logging file system or a logging database and you're logging to it and then you're updating the database, if your memory is persistent, you can manage that differently, significantly different.
Completely new data structures that, you're not trying to optimize the I/O layout or pattern around storage, you're optimizing around, CPU access and things like that.
So. Exactly. Wow. So we've got that in an SSD, and what's really cool when you connect it back to VMware, in an SSD form factor, there's two really good usages. One is vSAN, obviously. And as a caching tier, we've been showing off at the show here, we built some vSAN architectures where we put this in the cache. As compared to last year, which we built the world's fastest vSAN last year, all SSD with all Intel. And we swapped out the SSDs and put in the latest 3D NAND for the data tier, the P4500 SSD, and then our P4800X Optane SSD in the cache tier. Doubled the performance.
Wow, that's crazy.
If you just look at the SSD cost, it was 4% more for the SSDs. It doubled the performance, and at the same time, you got 4 times the capacity.
That's insane.
Well, and it's great with these new CPUs also, as well as just because there's so many fewer interrupts. You're getting more IOPS, and but at the same time, you're also not taking over half the host, from a compute basis. You're still remaining in a very efficient compute budget and leaving CPU, left for actual workloads to run and the box to do more than storage. So.
Yeah, well, that's the key to the NVMe interface, and that's why it's so tantamount, because the number of CPU cycles for every I/O is significantly less for NVMe. So, even in an I/O intensive application like a database where you want to spend all your CPU cycles on a query, you still have a bunch of I/Os, you get more CPU for the query and you get more value out of the CPU by doing that.
So now software needs to start, getting caught up with the hardware.
I can tell you my conversation with our engineering, historically we're like, the devices are pretty fast. We've got reasonably efficient code. And then some of this stuff's coming. And I had these conversations 2 years ago, even with Christos. He's like, there's a lot of optimizations we're having to make in our code and continue to make to take advantage of this stuff. It's fun watching the bottlenecks bounce back and forth between different pieces of hardware, the software stack, and so forth. But we're all working together with our partners to push the limits of what can be done.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, Christos and I met a couple of years ago and started talking about this. And you've seen some improvements coming in already. I mean, you guys have made tremendous improvements. So when you went out to the 6.5 and 6.6 version or the 6.0 update 3, you've really improved the latency in the storage stack, and you get more IOPS through the storage stack. And we're going to continue to work on that because there's definitely room. The evaluator group tested out this vSAN, and they said, and it made me so happy. It warmed my heart. They said, storage is no longer the bottleneck.
Yeah, I love it.
And I said, what? Can you say that again? Yeah, storage is no longer the bottleneck.
Yeah.
Now it's software, it's networking, it's other things. Yes.
Your applications in many cases. I mean, yeah. If you really need it to be that much faster, it's probably just in DRAM anyways. But now that we're going to soon potentially be able to do, you know, byte addressable and these things in the near-ish future, I guess, rather than this hypothetical. Although I guess nothing old is new. I mean, didn't mainframes used to have persistent memory and things? So.
Well, they did. But, the whole persistence thing takes some software improvement. But in the meantime, the other use case that I didn't talk about in the VMware context is your swap-to-host cache feature. So you've got a way that you can swap in and out of DRAM if the system's oversubscribed.
Yep.
It's already built in. Optane is a perfect media for that.
Oh, and we can redirect that to a specific device or data store.
Absolutely.
So there's probably some improvements we need to make on that stack, I'm sure. But
yeah, but it's a good first step. And we've got some customers that do it today with NAND, and not very many, but a couple. I think we'll get a whole lot more that are going to do it with Optane because, DRAM is a challenge.
So we had a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, we had some folks from the vSAN Ready Labs team. I'm not sure if you're aware of who they are. They do the vSAN Ready notes. They write all of the do all the certifications. And I know they worked with Optane. So
is that Catherine's lab?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I didn't know if you had any background
on that. Oh, I know Catherine for sure. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We meet regularly.
Yeah, that's what she said. And I think that's exciting, to be able to work with a company like Intel that has everywhere in vSAN, and to be able to get in early days to get certified with you guys, I think is just it's just the way to go. Yeah.
It's just all the new solutions, things are coming out. I mean, it's changing, how our customers consume our products. Like you mentioned, the memory over subscription coming back. That's something a lot of people had kind of gone away from just because of the performance implications of swapping your disks or things. But being able to, there's going to be a lot of fun coming soon. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is, Intel's third year of playing with vSAN and at VMworld. And we've shown off now 3 years in a row, world's fastest vSAN. We did it again, and we keep doubling, right? The first year it was triple.
That's crazy.
The next year it was double. And everybody said, hey, can you continue this? Can you sustain?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to working with you guys to help optimize that software stack because I'm not sure I have a new SSD up my sleeve in the next year. But you never know.
You never know.
I think we got some ideas. But yeah, no, these have not been like small jumps every year.
No,
it's
massive.
Been fun watching.
It's ridiculous.
And I remember I was talking to someone, when the first year you guys did it, or was it the first or the second, you put, I think it was 6.2 million or 6.6 million IOPS out of a 64 node cluster. I remember someone saying, can vSAN handle my workload? I'm like, I don't know. Intel managed to hit 6.4 million IOPS. I mean, what are you doing with your application? They're like,
I guess that's enough.
Yeah. My workload feels small now. I'm going to go hide in the corner.
I was similarly talked to somebody yesterday who had their entire data center, they 10 servers and a big EMC box. And he was telling me about what he had in his infrastructure. I said, well, you can do that on our 4-node cluster and you'll have a lot of room to spare. You know, your whole VDI infrastructure, your whole database infrastructure, all your virtualization, 4 nodes.
When the density is also just impressive of how much data you can get in there. And it started, I was like, well, we got to worry about the network. But now 100 gigs obviously becoming affordable. It's fun watching the bottlenecks bounce around in the design, so to speak.
Well, I think some of the cool things, I think Pat mentioned everything's pendulum swinging back and forth. Disaggregation going back to then hyperconversion disaggregated.
Right.
We're seeing that even in the storage with NVMe over fabrics. And I don't know if you guys have talked about that technology.
Yeah, it was the Micron booth. They had a demo and some other guys, Avago and some other.
Yeah, we've got a demo in our booth with a company called Atala.
Atala. Okay.
Atala,
I think they registered that article about
that. What's that about?
Yeah, so NVMe over fabrics, you imagine you have a blade system and you want to throw in vSAN and you don't have any space for drives. But you do have a space for another Ethernet add-in card. You put in this Ethernet add-in card, you use your existing Ethernet fabric, and then you have a JBOF, just a bunch of flash box.
Top of rack flash.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
and so you can imagine this with the ruler especially, but you can just have a rack of just flash, and they've got an FPGA inside that box that talks Ethernet on one side and PCIe SSD on the other side. And it looks logically like the devices are inside the server. So you can take several devices allocated to this blade, several to the other blade. You can build your vSAN even though you don't have drive slots.
Yeah.
And the latency is pretty good. I mean, they're able to only add 5 or 6 microseconds. So even an Optane SSD across that interface is still pretty darn good.
Well, this has got to be the next generation of composable infrastructure, or the, is Intel, I've always heard, the rack scale infrastructure, the disaggregation of components.
Well, I think it adds a lot of benefit to be able to then separate out the refresh cycles. People are a little bit concerned about hyperconverged because they have to refresh their storage and their compute at the same time.
Right.
So that's the way they look at it. And this gives them an opportunity to have some more flexibility in that space.
Have my shelf of CPUs, my shelf of RAM, my brick of flash, and connect it with these, you know, exotic fast networking capabilities of PCI Express Fabric. Also, OmniPath.
Yeah, OmniPath fabrics. New fabrics are coming out every day. It will go into the rack scale design for sure. I'm sure we'll be seeing some VMware vSAN technologies with OmniPath pretty soon.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. We got to do another 2x at least. I mean,
OmniPath will do some very fun things to the network. So.
For sure.
Do we even call it a network? I guess we call it a fabric, right?
Fabric. But it's nice if it can be composable on Ethernet. That's the benefit of this. Some of the solutions out there for NVMe over fabrics.
Ethernet. I'm not going to bet against Ethernet. It's survived a very long time and left a trail of technologies in the dustbin of history behind it. So with RDMA on Ethernet, we're going to have a lot of new fun interconnecting things here.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. Intel chasing the holy triangle of performance. Fast, persistent, and cheap. Gotta love it. All right, well, the next gentleman we have for you comes from Western Digital. His name is Jonathan Flynn. Jonathan was with Fusion.io, which then became Western Digital and SanDisk. And he is a true performance nerd. This guy was awesome. We talked benchmarking. We talked about a lot of things that Western Digital has been doing right now. He even did several sessions at VMworld, so be sure to check those out. One of the sessions he did, which was around benchmarking and vSAN, it's called Amplifying VMware vSAN Performance, a Deep Dive into Testing and Tuning. And the session number was STO2591. I'll be sure to put that on the show notes of the page. So you're going to definitely want to check that one out because that one was filled with information. So, all right, well, here's our vSAN performance conversation with Mr. Jonathan Flynn. Take a listen.
As Western Digital, we have quite a broad product portfolio, and so it's pretty exciting. We actually have product in two or three of the booths here in the HCI zone, as well as other products in process, right? One example is HPE has our UltraStar SS300 device. Mm-hmm. It's the high-performance 12-gig SAS, does over a gigabyte a second, hundreds of thousands of IOPS. They'll be using that device as the caching tier in vSAN. Another really cool one, this device, the SN200 and 260, is a high-performance NVMe device that is currently undergoing its final IOVP testing and vSAN testing, and Cisco is going to be using that device as the caching tier for their Blade Series chassis, their 2U, their 1U chassis, and that one is going to be a really slick caching device. It actually just won some awards at Flash Memory Summit for being one of the best high-performance NVMe devices in the industry. The add-in card can actually do 6 gigabytes a second because it's a by 8 PCI Express, right?
See, I love how storage guys, it's about gigabytes here, not bits. If you spend too much networking, remember, multiply by 8 there.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's one thing I've noticed in all the vSAN Observer charts. You know, I've been doing a lot of network comparison because in my performance testbed, I'm running 56 gig Ethernet. Right, but the results in the vSAN Observer for network is all in gigabytes, and
whoops.
So I've.
Well, this has always been a classic thing. Storage internal, it was gigabytes. Networks in gigabits. I wish there was like a flag you could set on the charts, maybe to flip that over. Maybe
to make it understandable, right? Yeah, and then the last one that I'd hit is probably the one I'm most excited about. Probably because it's my baby. I did the design and then brought in the servers in the lab and convinced Supermicro to do this. Is based on our Essential NVMe product line. Essential NVMe for us is a low-level SATA replacement or a low-end SATA replacement NVMe device. It still connects via 4 lanes of PCI Express, but it only gets a gigabyte and a half a second. So it only utilizes about one and a half lanes, right?
Oh, okay.
The cool thing with that is you can fill a 24-bay chassis without being concerned about thermals. These are 10-watt, 12-watt devices versus...
Oh, not the, what are they, 45 or 25?
It's 25, 25 on the high end. So like the high-end device that Cisco is using, the SN200, its U.2 form factor is a 25-watt device. Most of the OEMs are finding that they can't really cool more than 10 to 12 in their new 2U solutions. Whereas this one, you can fill it chock full. And so this Supermicro solution has 24 of these in the front, and it's their big twin solution. So there's 4 nodes. Each node gets 6 drives, so it's perfect for 2 disk groups per node. We're getting some stellar performance on it.
So you're telling me that NVMe is here to stay or what?
Definitely.
We can finally get rid of SATA.
It seems like not that long ago, people were like, no one's picking up on this NVMe, like early days. But now it's like all...
Well, the other thing with NVMe is I've corrected some customers recently. They've been, you know, I've had several conversations of, well, we're looking at NVMe, but we can't hit that. The price on that's still too high. They're only the high end drives. I'm like, no, there's a full range of NVMe products. You're gonna have high endurance, your jet engines, and you're also gonna have your workhorses. So
exactly, and that's what you find. We've developed two streams in Western Digital. And by the way, Western Digital is SanDisk, HGST. You know, it's quite a broad envelope of brands, right? But we've developed two swimming lanes. Basically, we've got the essential NVMe and the high performance NVMe. The cost difference is substantially different, right? The main thing with the essential NVMe is that 15% price premium over SATA SSDs. So that puts it into the cents, tens of cents, you know, 50 cent, 40 cents per gigabyte range for the Skyhawk device, whereas the high-end NVMe are still in the dollars range.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But if you're running, you know, a ratio of, you know, 10% or 5%, you're just using as a write buffer.
Mm-hmm.
You get the performance characteristics in the front of that fast device and the low cost, you know, freewheeling in the back. I mean, maybe this is, you know, I'm starting to describe this vSAN all NVMe design like a mullet, I guess. But, you know, low cost party in the back, high performance business in the front, you know.
The mullet vSAN.
I'm
like
so glad you're not in marketing.
Oh, gosh. So let's talk about benchmarking. I know you've got a session coming up.
Yeah. So this afternoon, 5:30, both Chin Wei and myself are hosting a session around the Western Digital vSAN performance testbed. It addresses, you know, why we put it together, right? Which is a good question. I think more of the storage companies need to do things like this.
Sure.
It also talks about some vSAN performance and tuning knobs, all the features. You know, what happens when you disable checksum? What happens when you enable dedupe and compression?
Yep.
What happens with RAID 5 and RAID 6 erasure coding, things like that, right? And lots of performance charts. I'm crossing my fingers that I'll be able to get through everything, right? But it is on vSAN 6.6.1, and it shows some of the latest numbers, and some of them are pretty great.
I've always been really impressed with some of the content you guys have put out, because you've tried to do much more realistic testing consistently and not just go straight for a pure hero number and everything. And you, I know you did the HammerDB.
Yes.
You did the HammerDB testing.
Yeah, so it's actually one of the mandates of the lab that I work for, the Data Propulsion Labs. It is the legacy Fusion IO into SanDisk and into Western Digital. And our team is geared towards looking at our storage devices from the customer's perspective. And so data sheet numbers, oh, we can do a million IOPS. Well, that is if you have a total effective queue depth of 524 per node with 20 threads. And, you know, a SQL Server database has one thread that's with a queue depth of 32. You know,
Lab queen.
Yeah, exactly. And so one of the tools we use in the lab is HammerDB. And so this we're in the... My Microsoft counterpart has done a lot of job doing a lot of work doing infrastructure around automating. And so we're about to bring that automation into the VMware side. So I just got to write some modules for VM deployment and everything. But once that's all done, we'll be able to easily kick around HammerDB results and be able to show new order operations per minute as well as data warehousing results fairly quickly. This last weekend, I went ahead and did a manual run on that vSAN ready node I mentioned earlier with the Skyhawk device.
Yeah.
It had 12 VMs because it's a four-node cluster, so that's three nodes per VM. And each VM had 16 vCPUs and 96 gig of memory. It was a 5,000 warehouse database, and I kicked off HammerDB with an OLTP workload, and each VM did over 300,000 new order operations per minute, giving us a total cluster performance of 3.6 million new order operations per minute. Now, obviously, it's one run. I need to curate the data and ensure that I've got all the settings clean and right. But we're actually thinking of taking this and, you know, taking it to ESG. I mean, it's just such a good number that to have it independently verified would be a lot of fun. Right?
Yeah. Those are some big numbers. That's a lot of, if you're an e-commerce shop, that is a lot of transactions. I mean, I know airlines that don't push that many in a minute.
I mean, Cyber Monday, you know, a number I heard a few years back was that, you know, Amazon was hitting about 30,000 new order operations per minute, right? Yeah. I'm sure that some of the Chinese companies hit a lot higher than that. And now, in this day and age,
Singles day.
So much, And so to be able to show 3.6 million across 12 databases is really cool.
Now, if only we could get somebody to automate some of this ACI bench work.
Yeah, we got to, you know.
Do you know anybody?
I mean, yeah, clicking a couple of times, that's too much.
You know, in my presentation, I actually show some of the benchmarks that I'm planning to run on the performance testbed. And the first one is HCI bench, right? I got a hold of a Storage Review, good friends over there, Brian Beeler and Kevin O'Brien. And some of their first testing was HCI bench. And they actually introduced me to Chen Wei about a year ago, right? Chen, amazing character.
Great guy.
Very sharp. And so he and I have been working since then, pushing performance, doing some, I feedback some stuff. One example was the number of paravirtual SCSI controllers. The two releases ago, it was the way it load balanced the VMDKs as it added was after you hit 15 VMDKs, it'll add a second paravirtual controller, right? And so one of the feedback there was, well, why don't we see about balancing that a little better? Yeah. Well, as soon as you hit four, add a second controller and then
auto
start.
Balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's better.
And so that's already been moved into it. And so we've been going back and forth for a while. And really, some of the results we're getting with four disk groups per node, I'm hitting over 900,000 IOPS on 4K random read.
Wow.
Which is, that's a four node cluster, right? And that's on the V3 processors from a couple years ago. Right on Purley, I'm actually on a 400 cluster with two disk groups. I'm hitting 634,000, which is a small performance increase, but it's still pretty big. I think one of the big things that people don't understand with vSAN is your core frequency counts. Like when you're buying CPUs, you need to buy, you know, the higher the core frequency, the better. But you have to. There's always a trade-off there, right?
Yeah, don't go get any 1.8 gigahertz low watt processors. Like,
well, if you look at the highest, the top bin on Purley, right? The platinum, the Xeon platinum, right?
Yeah.
The top bin is 28 cores. That is, you kind of drool over it unless you're paying licensing fees.
Yeah, unless
Oracle,
you have to pay
right?
for that.
Yeah. I was about to say Larry and his pirate yacht. You know, license auditors will show up.
But the drawback with that processor
is... Did you say the word cores?
Exactly.
Did somebody say core?
The drawback with that processor, it's only a 2.1 or 2.2 gigahertz processor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so for vSAN, unfortunately, that actually kind of hampers the performance a little bit. And so it makes sense to scale back. The processor I've targeted for most of the vSAN ready nodes that I'm helping with our partners is the 6154. It's the gold. It's an 18-core, 3 gigahertz processor, right?
That's still a lot of cores.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're actually, we've said the word cores too many times. Seriously, someone's license audit division is just going to magically appear. But no, it's that's still a lot. But
that
you know,
frequency.
And that frequency combined with just the advancements. I mean, a 3 gigahertz of that is not the same as some ancient, you know, Northwood core that time forgot.
Oh, yeah. You've got the memory speed increases. You have the ability to increase your memory in your system without seeing memory speed decrease. The new Purley platforms are looking quite cool. Yeah.
The cache architecture improvements. You know, it's some fun stuff.
You know, the other thing that I saw in my testing, and this is one that I'm going to be hammering in my presentation later today, is network speed. We show that all flash vSANs, minimum requirement is 10 gig.
Yeah.
Yep.
What I did when I did my testing, I did it with all 56 gig so that I wanted to eliminate store as a network as any kind of bottleneck. Well, as when my session got accepted here, I said, you know what? Networking design is very important. What happens if I take that 56 gig and step it down to 10? And for my large block size, 32K and 64K, I saw about half the performance. And so then I started charting up. I looked at the vSAN Observer results in HCI Bench and saw that I was hitting closer to 20 gigabits a second for all flash vSAN.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So for, again, my designs, when I'm helping my my partners, I'm suggesting that they go default with a 25 gig network.
Yeah, 25 is the new 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's...
Now, the interesting thing there, though... It is a natural progression, right?
Yeah, you know.
The interesting thing there, though, is, you know, if you've just made a big investment in 10 gig Ethernet, don't worry. These solutions will still plug in and negotiate at 10 gig, right?
Yeah.
It gives you the ability, if you buy with 10 gig, it gives you the ability to upgrade the network later and get an instant performance increase on large block sizes, which is a big piece of it.
Networking's fun. On that 56 gig, is that a... What switch is that?
So in order to get 56 gig, you got to do Mellanox.
I was about to say, that sounds like a Mellanox.
So that was back.
They make some fast stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ConnectX-3 has been around for a long time, right?
No.
And so they actually made the smart decision to take their older switches, older meaning a couple years, and actually just, if you with a firmware update, you no longer have to buy a license for 56 gig. It's just free in the switch now, right? And so if you've got some of the older Mellanox hardware, you know, make sure you're on the latest firmwares because you can get some performance increases, right? But that being said, you have 25 gig NICs from everybody now. You can on most all the OEMs, you can get a 25 gig NIC option.
Yep.
Yeah, no, and the switches, I'm also seeing 100 gig where you break out the 100 and the 425
channels. Yeah, actually, because I'm running 25 gig NICs here, we had to go with one of our newer switches in the lab. So when I say here, I mean the Supermicro Ready node. And for that, we did get the breakout cables to SFP25. It's 100 gig to four 25 gig ports.
So, John, you've been doing some blogging, right? Do you do that on your own blog or is it for Western Digital?
It's on the Western Digital blog. It's itblogs.
Okay.
.sandisk.com, something like that. Yeah. We will be moving more towards a Data Propulsion Labs landing page so that as time moves on, you'll be able to see blogs directly from our team, which is solely around, you know, from the customer's perspective, application performance. We've got Oracle expertise. We've got NoSQL, so MariaDB, MySQL, et cetera, all over the place expertise there. We've got the Microsoft expertise. We're constantly doing fast track architectures, that kind of thing.
Well, and as these applications start consuming these faster and faster clusters of flash, you have to have application experts who know how to unlock the floodgate, so to speak, and take advantage of that hardware.
Well, I mean, frankly, this lab did start at Fusion.io. And Fusion.io had the uphill battle of introducing an all-flash PCI Express attached device in 2007.
Yeah,
right?
When people were using comparatively either, you know, incredibly slow iSCSI or incredibly, you know, very low PPS on switch, comparatively speaking, latencies, or even fiber channel that was an incredible bottleneck. And how LUNs and queues and stuff were being done versus this.
Yeah.
Right, sitting next to the CPU and the PCI.
One of the interesting things there is back in the Fusion.io days, our sales guys would go visit customers, Oracle DBAs, and, you know, we'd put the card in and say, okay, well, we have the database over. Go ahead and run your query. And the DBA would say, all right, well, kick it off and say, all right, let's turn around, say, let's go get coffee. And the sales guy would just stand behind him and say, well, let's just wait a second. The DBA would turn back around and the query would be done, even though he was expecting it to be 30 minutes to an hour. You know, flash today is more of a commodity now. You can get this performance with a lot of devices. The Western Digital product lineup for flash is substantial. We have over 400 devices, both spinning media and flash, qualified and certified for vSAN. That's amazing.
That is insane.
You can do any combination of our devices, really, and come up with a good solution. One of the other ready nodes we're working on with Supermicro is an ultra deep hybrid ready node. It's using the 12 terabyte Helium drives.
Hybrid? I thought hybrid was dead, John.
No. Hey, people have giant piles of cat photos that keep growing. Uh-huh. They need to store them somewhere. So.
Well, look at it this way. We're going to put the high-performance NVMe device in that solution.
Yeah.
It'll be 6.4 terabytes in capacity. That means you'll have 18 terabytes of cache. You know, if you're 600, you know, you're right buffering, but then massive read cache.
Yeah.
Your active working set size will have to be massive to be going out to those 12 terabyte spindles, right? The only challenge with this solution, and this is something that I'm a little bit worried about moving into testing, is drain and fill.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's like, all right, we're evacuating this host because we're bringing in the new ones. And part of that's the network stack's got to get sped up. Part of that's even just back in IO processing.
I mean, think about it. This is a 2U solution with 12 drives, 144 terabytes in 2U with 18 terabytes of cache in the back end. It's small clusters. If you move to a 64 node cluster, you're talking about a couple months of rolling updates, right?
Well, so what I have seen people do when you start going to those hybrids designs with the giant is go FTT at 2, so that way you've got 3 copies of the data.
That accelerates. That is a very good solution.
Because that way, even if you have a host, just, you know, light on fire spontaneously or something, you still are fully protected while that data is resynchronizing. The other thing is, as you add more nodes with that, you're right, it is a lot from drain fill, but your rebuilds do exponentially get faster because of the many, many, many crops.
Yeah, so that's true. That's very true.
As weird as it sounds, I would actually rather see the larger size of that. It's going to start, assuming you maintain a full cut through on the network. You don't, once you start having to hop switches,
edge to core over subscription. Yeah.
Very cool. John, we got to do this again, man. You need to come back on the podcast and geek out with us.
What do you think? Of course.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
All right. Well, those are the two conversations that I wanted to share with you on this week's episode of Partner Perspectives. I hope you guys enjoyed them as much as we enjoyed chatting with those folks. Thank you to James Myers from Intel and Jonathan Flynn from Western Digital. You guys were awesome. So let me know what you guys think about this whole Partner Perspectives version of the podcast. We've got great content. We had awesome conversations, and I think they're worthwhile to share with you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed them. So let us know. Just email us at podcast@vmware.com. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to the podcast and listen to all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, John's going to be back and tell us all about his adventures at Spice World. But until then, bye for now. Hey, John on my soundboard. What did you think of this episode without you?
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
You are? Oh, man, that is awesome. You're awesome.
Beat is right. Storage is cool.
Winning.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.